Her music arrives like a massive glacier, towering, deliberate and unstoppable. To those who follow modern music, such sounds as these could only be the work of the Finnish composer Kaija Saariaho, whose works are now performed by the greatest orchestras and opera companies in the world. Her newest opera, Emily, arrived at the Lincoln Center Festival this summer, and, as is typical of Saariaho, is anything but typical, depicting an 18th century French female physicist in a race against her own pregnancy. She knows that childbirth will kill her, and is working feverishly to complete her magnum opus. She's the only character, and the plot is minimal. Now, Saariaho tells the Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns how she approached this opera like a cubist painter, one who attempts to show all sides of a subject at once.
There she sits in deep contemplation, the legendary Emily du Châtelet, 42-year-old former lover of Voltaire, who died in 1749, her claim to posterity being her lucid French translations of the works of Isaac Newton. It was a strange, picaresque life, one in which her brilliant mind at times was directed towards perfecting secret gambling techniques. All terribly interesting, you might say, but is it operatic? In retrospect, composer Kaija Saariaho, the demure woman behind so many bold works, wonders if it was, in her words, a bit crazy. But having written what some critics have called one of the first great operas of the 21st century, listeners tend to give her the benefit of the doubt.
There really practically nothing happened. Every scene has a title, and that title I create kind of musical abstraction of that subject matter. There is, of course, Emily's reaction to these different things which give the character to the music. I was imagining it like a little bit cubist portrait of Emily. If you would take photos all over a person, and in fact you cannot see them simultaneously, but they are layers.
Most opera characters establish themselves by what they do and who they are in relation to each other. Saariaho's tend to exist in contemplative isolation. I suggested to her that they reveal their personalities because the music shows us their auras.
I don't use that word, but that's so interesting. What can you communicate with music? But that is what interests me in opera, and what can we say with music in that context.
At times, Saariaho comes off looking like a modern-day shaman more than an opera composer. She's hardly flamboyant. In fact, she's downright shy. Like her music, her conversation comes out sounding like hypnotic incantations. She looks extraordinary, with reddish-orange hair, delicate white skin, and eyes that are so intense it's hard to say what color they are. She can be animated and charming, but always seems to be looking to the next level, never staying on the surface. In the 1990s, she was mainly considered an experimental composer, working at Paris's cutting-edge electronic music studio, IRCOM, where, among other things, she created a full-length ballet score with mostly computer-generated sound. All of that changed in 2000 with the opera L'Amour de Loin, Love from Afar, with its antique plot involving a French medieval troubadour who falls in love with the Countess of Tripoli on the basis of description. It was a simple story, but one that completely captivated no less than the Salzburg Festival at the work's premiere. One of the great breakthroughs represented by that opera and Kaija Saariaho's music in general is her use of electronic-generated sound in conjunction with live instruments. Many composers of the avant-garde, such as Pierre Boulez, believed that there would be a time when the public would subscribe to music-generating computers much the way they do to symphony orchestras. Instead, Saariaho represents a movement towards the integration of the two in the mainstream. Had Debussy lived into the electronic age, he might have done the same. But rarely in her music can you tell which is what.
That's my aim. Why should they be separable? You know, they are there to complete the texture. They are not there to create contrast.
As a girl growing up in Finland, Saariaho dreamed of being an organist in some isolated country church. Well, that didn't happen. This year, she was composer in residence at Carnegie Hall and moved from Paris to New York for most of the academic year, while her husband, fellow composer Jean-Baptiste Barrière, taught at Columbia University. She looked forward to having some anonymity in New York, where she thought she was less well-known. It didn't work out that way, and not to her displeasure.
I enjoy it because in any way people are here quite open and they easily come to speak anyway, so it's always very positive. But on the other hand, because I'm a very private person, I feel a bit embarrassed because I need to consider that it can happen anytime, you know, so it's away from the privacy.
Saariaho has somewhat fraught feelings about Paris, where she has lived for years, and doesn't love the way public opinion about her music so dramatically seesaws. And if New York loves her so much, well, why not move here? She also had enjoyed a brief stay in Philadelphia earlier this year when visiting her friend Esa-Pekka Salonen while he was guest conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I think Paris is more nervous. New York is physically very energetic. But I'm not sure I could live here permanently and compose in the middle of city, you know. Even here, you know, in this very quiet neighborhood, you know, in New York terms, I feel the city very strongly.
So she's back in Paris, and what city, I suppose, can compete? She isn't the first great composer to return there wanting to reconquer the place at some point, and probably she can. Saariaho is of this world, though probably not 100%. She stands outside of it, observing forces that we don't see, and ones that she, thankfully, can hear anywhere.
The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.